need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to Nature Backed Podcast, where we are speaking with entrepreneurs and investors about the green future. My name is Tarmo Virki, and today my guest is Simo Ellila. Welcome, Simo.
Thanks, Tarmo. Great to be here.
Tell us, what is Pekilo?
Well, Pekilo is it's a mycoprotein. So essentially, it's derived from fermentation of fungi. So we produce a whole fungal biomass through fermentation, dry it into a powder, and then you can use it just like you would any conventional plant protein, like soy protein or pea protein.
And you have built a company around it. How did it all begin?
So we're a rather unique biotech startup in the sense that, I mean, we're a three-year-old company at this point, but the technology has a long history, actually more than 50 years. So I'm such a lazy innovator that I just decided to take an existing idea and try to repurpose that instead of reinventing the wheel. So basically, the roots of Pekilo and the whole Pekilo fermentation process go back way back to all the way to the 1960s. We're of course a company based in Finland, and in Finland, one of the major parts of our economy is the forest sector. We have some of the world-leading pulp and paper companies, a lot of pulp and paper plants. And back in the day, these companies used to have an issue. They used to produce a byproduct known as spent sulfite liquor. In the 1960s, they used to still dump this side stream into lakes and rivers. And that, of course, caused a lot of eutrophication in the waterways, and that was not acceptable anymore, and they had to find ways how to treat this byproduct. So there was a big R&D drive. The scientists realized that if you leave this stuff lying on the lab bench, what happens? Fungi start to grow. So fungi are nature's recyclers. They're rather remarkable in being able to degrade just about anything, and so that was kind of where it all began. They started researching, like, could they use fungi to treat this water, essentially. So the process was originally developed first and foremost to treat industrial byproduct stream, and the protein per se was just, you know, you could say it was a byproduct of, or it was a, that was the secondary thing, like you were producing something new. And it was 12 years in R&D, scale up, piloting, the usual that goes into developing a tech in industrial tech. And then they went so far that in 1975, they built the first industrial scale production plant where they produced up to 10,000 tons of this stuff a year from spent sulfite liquor. And the product was sold to pigs and chicken in the Finnish feed market. So there was, of course, a lot of research first on the safety of the product. A lot of animal testing before it was approved, and then we had 15 years of industrial operation. So we actually have two Pekilo factories in Finland back in those days. So it was quite a unique innovation, I have to say. Like, how did Finnish paper engineers come up with this? Nothing like it had been done before, and hasn't really been done since. I mean, there's a lot of companies nowadays making mycoprotein, but the concept is quite different. They grow fungal biomass normally on sugar, and then they kind of make this kind of wet product that they would freeze and try to sell through the supermarket chains to to consumers, but the peculiar process is really a biorefining process. How do you take an industrial side stream and do something with that? So it was a really unique innovation, and unfortunately they stopped producing it in the early 90s.
Do you know why? Was it the Finnish Great Economic Recession, or?
Yeah, that played a part. The acute reason was that the paper industry's chemistry changed. Essentially, they were no longer producing the side stream, so there was no more raw material to produce Bekila. But then, yes, also the engineering company that had built these factories went bankrupt in the Great Depression in Finland in the early 90s. So yeah, that kind of just, you know, shelved the whole thing, and it was very effectively forgotten, because myself and my co-founders were, you know, born in the 80s, and we studied biotech in Finland, and we had never heard of this thing. And well, we came across it in 2016, 17, around that time. And we just found it absolutely fascinating, this history, and started digging up everything we could about it. And it's been really interesting, detective work, trying to find all the documentation that's still out there in different places, and contacting these people, these people who are like in their 70s, but many of them surprisingly sharp still, and you know, trying to get all the information you can about the old process. And so that was basically the idea. The basic idea was, okay, let's try to revive this process. It's a unique innovation. There's still a lot of know-how. And then we were crunching the numbers, because we were really focused since the beginning that this has to be profitable. This has to be a good business. And what we quickly saw is that, well, doing what they did back in the day and selling this to pigs and chicken is not a really good business. So, and also not necessarily the most future-proof option. So we realized that we have to try and go to a higher value market. So that was one part of the equation. And then the other one was that obviously the raw material had run out from the Finnish pulp and paper sector, so we needed to find other inputs. So that was how we got going, essentially. We started figuring out, okay, what can we use as input in this process, and which market should we start targeting? In terms of where we could make this really profitable. And that's what we've been doing the past couple of years, essentially. We've been optimizing the process on lots of different industrial byproducts. Yeah, still from the forest industry. There are some plants that produce something suitable. But a big focus has been on the biofuels industry. So that's where my own background is. I used to work with the bioethanol industry in Brazil, and actually also in Finland. I knew that there would be lots of suitable side streams from that industry, and also from the food, like general food and ag industry. There are several raw material streams that you can use in this process. And then we've been optimizing the process for these different inputs and seeing that we can get a stable quality of Bekila protein produced, and then looking at what are the best applications. Actually, we've been kind of tailoring the product also for specific applications. So one is aquaculture, so fish feed, primarily salmon. There's salmon are carnivores, so unlike pigs and chicken, which eat just about anything. So the salmon feed is quite a lot more. The quality requirements are a lot higher, and the value is a lot higher than in these other feed types. So that's what may have been a big motivator. So there we partnered up with an industry leading company called Skretting, and yeah, we've got great results. The fish, actually, just a couple of weeks back, we were able to release results from Norway that show that the salmon actually grew better eating our Bekila mycoprotein than soy, which they're fed quite a lot these days. The fish grew better, they were healthier, so it looks really promising. Then the other higher value sector is pet food. So there we've been testing it with cats and dogs. That's also been promising. The animals really I'd like the product, and those sectors we could access today from a regulatory perspective, because
at Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible, because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
What about humans? Is that their regulatory challenge? Or
correct. Yeah. So today we could sell to these higher value animal nutrition segments, aquafeed and pet food, because our product is now on the European Union's feed material catalog. Essentially, we went to the European regulators, told them, like, look, here's a product. This was sold for 15 years. Here's all the data. It's safe and for animals. And that was it. It was really fast getting it in there. But for human consumption, it's a different story, right? In Europe is notorious for the stringency of food regulation, but we are planning to enter that space as well. So we had to modify the process a bit. We have to pay more attention to what kind of byproducts we would use. We're currently working, for instance, with the dairy industry. One of our owners is Valio, the local dairy company in Finland, and they have tons of like lactose from their dairy operations. It's actually really high quality. It's food grade completely, but it's not put to good use today. So we've been working on upcycling that into a food grade product. The process has required some tweaking to also get it to food grade spec. But we've done that, and hopefully within the next say 4 or 5 months, we're planning to file for that regulatory approval also for human use.
Life is hard, but finding a really great podcast makes the days go by so much easier. Hi, my name is Blue Talusma. I'm a writer, an emotional intelligence coach, and the host of Humanize with Blue Talusma, a podcast where we believe that when you humanize everyone in the room, a great conversation is almost guaranteed. Join us every week here on Electricast as me and my guest co-hosts unpack big topics and interview even bigger personalities with a sense of humor and a dash of mischief. If you're looking for a new best friend in your head, we've got you covered.
I mean, classically, the challenge of the, you know, the products or the innovations which come from the laboratory is the commercialization. How has it gone for you guys? I mean, you're coming from the VTT, which is, how do you describe VTT? A great research institution of Finland, or?
Yeah, it's a national lab similar to, I guess, yeah, in many countries you have national labs.
But kind of taking their kind of their research to the market, I understand that, you know, history has helped you guys a little bit, but today you still have to find the kind of new consumers to this.
Correct, yeah. Well, in animal nutrition, it's rather straightforward. I mean, the volumes of protein going into aquaculture and pet food, they're huge, and the companies are really looking for alternatives that are more sustainable. But in general, they just need more new sources of protein, because those sectors are growing fast and protein production is not really keeping up. So they're just eager to find new sources of protein, and of course they want to do their tests. I mean, with Skretting, it took us like, what would I say, well over 2 years, 2.5 or 3 years to go through all the testing they wanted to be sure that it works as they would like it, and it would work in their factories and so on. But from that point on, it's just, you know, being able to deliver and being able to deliver at a price point that makes it viable for them. Mm-hmm. In the human space, well, we're still looking at, well, frankly, we don't know. There's the whole aspect of consumer acceptance. The food companies seem really eager. So we've been surprised at how eager food companies have been to trial our product, even though we flag early on that, you know, it doesn't have regulatory approval yet, but still people are really excited to test it and be ready for whenever that regulatory approval is there.
How is the process working? Do you have your own big factory these days? Have you set up one of those old factories that the spaces could be empty these days, right?
Yeah. So no, actually, currently we only have a pilot line. And the old factories, one was completely decommissioned. And the factory building was actually turned into an art space, which is quite nice if you're ever in Finland. And the other one was sold to an enzyme company. And so the equipment is still there after 50 years. It's working, but it's in other use. So we have to start from scratch on the production. We have a pilot line. We raised 10 million in March, and we're currently designing our first larger scale factory, but that will still take, I would say, about 2 years to get built.
Somewhere in Finland, I assume.
Yeah, we hope to be able to announce before Christmas where that will be.
Cool, that's soon already.
Yeah.
The company today, you raised money earlier in the year. How many people you have these days?
I'm losing track. So we were five co-founders back in 2020. We grew very slowly, hiring a few people. We were up to 10 when we raised the funding round in March, and now we're up to about 20 people, give or take.
Okay. Still all in Finland, or?
Yeah, all in Finland for now.
Okay. What's the kind of, I mean, one side is, of course, that, you know, starting to work on the possible human use of the protein, but from the other side, what are the next milestones for you guys? One is the putting up the factory, clearly, of course. Anything else which is in the card, what are you keeping up in the night, or?
Yeah, I mean, the two big things that we raised the money for was getting this food approval and then starting to design a factory. So those are the big things. But we are also working on several cases where other companies would like to use our technology. So companies who have large volumes of byproduct streams, where it would then be more of a, let's say, licensing or joint venture play rather than us building our own plant. So we have a lot of those in the works at different stages. So those are also taking quite a lot of our time.
I assume licensing is especially more complex processes. Then it becomes rather time consuming, I would expect.
Yeah.
From the growth side, I mean, now in Finland, setting up the, or working on a factory, when will you be, when will you grow out of Finland?
That's a good question. Well, as mentioned, if somebody decides to license this or we form a joint venture, it might be sooner than you think. But the reality is that this first factory will serve several purposes. It's close to our R&D, and it's going to be, you could say that it will be very integrally a part of our future R&D. But after that, we have to move out of Finland just because of the market size. I mean, our market in terms of food products, in terms of pet food, everything is too small. So basically after that, we have to go abroad. And then looking at priorities, I would say it's really Europe and the US in the short term. Also, of course, in the food space, a lot of people are going to Singapore. That's something we're looking at because of the
license.
Yeah, exactly. So they're very welcoming to food tech and try to make the approval process as smooth as possible for new food products.
What could we do in Europe to fix this challenge?
I'll have to try and be politically correct here, but
no need. I'm sure nobody from Brussels will listen.
Well, there's been quite a lot of frustration with EFSA, the European Food Safety Authority. We actually in Finland we were originally fighting to get it to be in Finland. We lost that battle to the Italians. Berlusconi pushed hard and got it to go to Parma. I don't want to say that influences their how they work, but the problem. I mean, we've got to know some people. We're working with a lot of consultants and also have a few chats directly with the EFSA people. And I personally think it's a bureaucratic problem. So the scientists at EFSA, I'm sure they're very qualified. They're thorough. That's great. That's fine. But it's just about getting a transparent, simple to understand process in place that everybody can navigate. It feels like, they've been shifting the goalposts all the time and the applicants are just really confused about how the process goes. They seem to be very, focused on the bureaucracy rather than the science behind the safety. So
nothing wrong with Italians, but I do have to share a good story from a friend of mine who was in Italy doing a passport renewal or the visa renewal or something like that. And he was telling how he was standing in the really, really hot office space for 3 hours in a queue. And when he got to the counter and presented his documents, he was told by the clerk, "Take the next counter, please. This is not for you." And when he started to yell at the clerk said, "We have run this country for 1,000 years. We know how it's done."
Yes. And well, of course, it's a European body, EFSA, but the pronunciations from the Italian government have not been very encouraging. They've been saying that they want to ban lab-grown meat and all kinds of innovations. Like, you don't need to innovate in food.
Exactly. In pizza, there is no pineapple, man.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I had an Italian colleague at BTT, and he once nicely said that you cannot have food tech in Italia. Don't fix it if it ain't broken. Nobody can say that Italian food is bad.
Exactly. That's how it works. Any positive notes to wrap this discussion up? I think the stuff you guys are doing is definitely amazing.
Something that's been highlighted, of course, a lot recently is the state of the VC market, and I guess especially on the alternative proteins, and I'm just it's going to be very interesting to see going forward how things develop, because alternative proteins, there's been a lot of discussion online. There's been calculations that an investment in alternative proteins has more than 10 times the impact of investments in let's say electric cars or whatever. But the space is in a tough spot. I mean, I think a lot of investors got burned and are moved along. But the drivers are so clear why we need these alternative proteins that it's going to be really interesting to see when this turns again and people realize that they need to be pushing here. I actually just wrote an opinion piece on this as well. And you know, I think governments have done a great job at supporting basic research in Finland and in Europe and in the US and enabling these startups to grow. But there needs to be a lot more effort from the government to get these things to go mainstream. And it's not just about promoting and subsidizing these new products, but it's looking at the playing field. Like, there's the agricultural industry is so subsidized and so geared towards the incumbents that you know, something has to give if we want to really make a sustainability leap in the food chain.
Exactly. Making the sustainability leap in the food chain. That's a good headline for this podcast episode also.
Yeah.
Good. Thanks, Simo, for your time. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Armo. It was great to talk to you.
Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where, through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electric Acid.
Introducing the Deep Leadership Podcast. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former submarine officer who spent 22 years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters.
Leadership matters.
Deep Leadership is real-world, actionable leadership advice from John and his expert guests. Become a leader worth following. Subscribe today.
Electric Acid.